What is up, basketball fans? Welcome to another live edition of the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron and two special guests today, Jorge Cantu and Jade Christian. Guys, obviously a lot has happened in the last 24 hours. How are we feeling?
Christmas came early, man. What can you say?
Yeah, it was a surprising move. I wasn't even awake when it happened, so I woke up and all the news were like, boom, 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 and I was like, wait, what? So it was crazy, and that's what we're here for.
Yeah, I mean, we had an earthquake, we had Kawhi decision, we had Paul George traded, like, let's give somebody a break. But yeah, you know, I woke up to like 40 notifications, and I saw the Paul George signing before the trading before the Kawhi signing, so I was like, oh, wow. I was like, the Clippers are definitely going to get Kawhi now. I was like, oh, wait, they got both already? Like, holy shit, here we go.
So I have an incredibly bad habit of waking up in the middle of the night eating food, so it happens. I was just going to wake up for a snack, and then I looked at my phone, and I was like half awake, and I was like, Kawhi to the Clippers, Paul George traded? Like, and then I saw the trade package too, and I was like, what is going on right now? And then I went back to sleep, and then I ended up waking at like 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday just so I could think about it. But obviously we're here to talk, get into it. Obviously find the NBA Outlet on iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But guys, let's get initial reaction to the trade. Obviously I'll drop the details real quick. Like Corey mentioned, it was Kawhi Leonard signing with the Clippers, and then they completed a trade with OKC out of nowhere. And they sent a lot of picks. They sent OKC sent their on, the Clippers sent their unprotected 2022 first round pick, 24, 26, and two picks from the Heat, 21 and 23, and then swaps for 23 and 25, and also Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Gallinari. So this is not a small trade package. Initial thoughts to – let's start with the Kawhi, and then we'll dive into the Paul George side.
Yeah, so this is kind of what the Clippers had been gearing up for, right? If you read in the stories, the profiles that have come out about Kawhi over the last few months, you find that he, you know, was a great player in high school, but wasn't heavily recruited by the major universities. And it seems like the Clippers gave him that recruiting experience he never got back in high school. They've been after him for about 18 months. I mean, Bruce Bowen is no longer doing play-by-play because he had some sort of not nice things to say about Kawhi last year when he was leaving San Antonio, and they got him out of the paint with the quickness. So this has been a targeted effort. I think some of the messaging has gotten mixed over the last few days about where Kawhi might end up. But when you really take a step back and look at it, the Clippers have been in the running since day one, and the move actually makes sense.
Yeah, I even though we've heard the Clippers like as legitimate contenders per se for Kawhi over the past year, I don't think a lot of people really took them. Well, at least I didn't take them like that seriously. I was like, if he's going to LA, he's most likely going to the Lakers, or he's re-signing with Toronto. I expected him to just go back to Toronto after winning a championship and Finals MVP. But I was definitely surprised to see that he did go to the Clippers. He made teams wait very long. You read the report that he asked the Lakers for more time. And look, well, seems like he got what he wanted.
I mean, the asking for more time. So I really do think at one point, I mean, I think this race changed on like a daily basis for where Kawhi thought he was going to go. So I do think at one point in time, he probably did think it was the Lakers. And I think the reason this also took so long is I think he told the Clippers right away. We heard the Jimmy Butler rumors, right, about them trying to package him with a star. So I think Kawhi, in a way, was trying to give the Clippers every opportunity to put him in a situation where he could sign with them, because I think he did like the depth and the overall roster alignment as it currently was. And then you think about it from this perspective, too, as, you know, Kawhi now has his own team. And it fits who Kawhi is as a person. Like, Kawhi going to the Lakers and pairing up with two other superstars, like, it didn't, like, make a lot of sense for who he was. Him staying in Toronto, like, yeah, it would have been a nice story. You know, they traded for him. They took the risk. It paid off. They got a chip. Maybe they could be more in the future. But the Clippers made the most sense. And once they were able to get Paul George, or at least solidify they could get someone to pair with Kawhi, it was a done deal.
Yeah, I think you brought up great points, Corey. Like you mentioned, it's like deep down, he always wanted to go to the Clippers because, you know, basketball perspective, he wanted to win as many championships. He signs with the Lakers, that team's super stacked. You know, the Raptors, he could go back there, but then there's a chance that Lowry and Gasol regress. So I think ideally he always wanted to go to LA. He didn't want to pair up with LeBron because he wants to be the best player in the NBA. And we all know if you're on LeBron's team, especially if Anthony Davis is there, a lot of people aren't going to consider you the best player in the league. With the Clippers, like Corey mentioned, he has the potential to be that guy, take his own team. and like telling them then that he wanted to add a star and kind of going back to it later last night saying, hey, if you guys get Paul George, I'll sign. And I found it really interesting that he kind of tried to recruit Paul George. Like, we knew he reached out to KD, but out of all people, he went to Paul George, knew he kind of wanted to come to LA, got the deal done, and the Clippers paid a price, but hey, you landed your two superstars.
And I just want to say quick, this is the definition of real deals move in silence, because yes. Paul George requested a trade earlier this week, and we didn't hear a peep about it. We didn't hear one thing. And then all of a sudden, it's the fact that Kawhi's been trying to pitch him the entire time, and then Paul George requested the trade. But we had no idea that this was even on the table. You know, we kind of thought, I mean, OKC was like the last team I was thinking about. Like, I was like, oh, maybe Steven Adams gets traded to the Celtics. Right. But like, I wasn't thinking about Paul George or Westbrook, and this was like a, you know, a left hook out of nowheres.
Yeah, and I think if anyone thought Paul George might be traded, it would be in the season if, like, say they had a bad season or they weren't a top seed and they wanted to change things up. But in the summer, obviously they paid a huge price. But, hey, pulling a guy who finished third in MVP votes is huge.
And maybe that is – I mean, going back to last summer, two things. One, for whatever reason, Paul George was just not feeling the Lakers, right? Because, I mean, in a lot of ways, I mean, you could argue if he could force his way out of L.A. Or out of OKC to get to the Clippers – he could have done the same with the Lakers, you know, assuming they still had the assets and, you know, you can do the math and imaginations, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think that, you know, Paul George made that decision last year to stay at OKC. I think he was kind of swept up in the moment, swept up in the good feelings. I think Russell Westbrook is a very strong personality. He could probably convince you, Paul was feeling himself at that birthday party. And it's like, OKC, let's do it. I love fishing, right? And then I think he looked up and he saw what his future looked like. With Russell Westbrook after that exit from the first round this year against the Portland Trailblazers. And I think Paul George probably looked at it and said, you know what? I can't imagine spending my prime here on a cash-strapped team. Kawhi was a great recruiter and ended up getting the deal done. But Paul George, I mean, he just turned down the city of Los Angeles, you know, a year ago. And to now have such a quick change of heart, this is probably something we'll get into a little bit later, where that leaves OKC. I think that's also something too that'll probably get swept under this, but Paul George not really seeming to want to be in OKC anymore, you know, about a year and a half, but then I think coming to his senses a bit and saying, you know, for my basketball future, I don't know if Oklahoma City is the right spot for me.
No, and I think it makes sense for Paul George to move on, because you know how critical I am of Russell Westbrook and, you know, the ceiling he and his teams have in the playoffs. It's been me over a year now saying you can only get so far with Russell Westbrook on your team, especially when he's making this much money, because you cannot get him the proper help or pay players the proper amount. And then something else that was very surprising is I didn't know Kawhi had enough leverage to convince Paul George to actually ask for a trade. Like, that's kind of surprising, because you look at Kawhi and he doesn't look like a guy that even has friends. Like, you know, like, not that type of social person, LeBron, you see hanging around with all these people, Chris Paul and his friends in the offseason. Kawhi doesn't look like that guy. So the fact that he had enough leverage and he could actually convince a legitimate star, and as you said, just the third place, he finished third place in the MVP board in just this season. The fact that he could convince that type of player to go, to, you know, force a trade out of his current situation is huge, 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 huge. And very, very surprising as well.
Yeah, and I think, and I tweeted this earlier this morning, because obviously when this hit me, I was like, you know, half awake, and you're trying to like piece it all together. This is now the second time that Paul George has set a standard, right? He was the first guy to push his way out of a small market saying, you're gonna lose me for nothing if you don't trade me. And now he's one of the first guys who got the max with OKC, and then a year later leveraged himself to get out after getting the most money he could get on the market with OKC. Right. So I think that's interesting that Paul George is now in two different scenarios in a span of 2 years, has really player empowerment 101. I mean, really forced his way into where he wanted to be. And on the Kawhi front, I think because of just who Kawhi's been over the course of the last 2 years, and the fact that we saw him kind of coming to place in San Antonio, and then this year, if he says, like, Paul George, like, I want you to be my right hand, like, I want us to be the next Jordan and Pippen of wings or whatever the case may be, you're just going to, like, go, I think. Because, like, also, as you mentioned, I think Jay mentioned it, you know, Westbrook does have that edge and ego, and I'm sure – This is now the four straight years Paul George was eliminated in the first round. Eventually, you're going to get tired of underperforming on the highest level. It's just going to get old. And when you see teams and Kawhi's asking you to team up, you're like, do I want to play with Kawhi or do I want to play with Westbrook? And I think we would all make the decision that Kawhi Leonard would be the better teammate to have.
Yeah, I think it makes you think about a couple things. Kawhi's super respected around the league by his peers. Like, you just know that how hard he is. He's finals MVP, one of the best players in the league. So Paul George obviously is going to respect him. And I also think that there's a possibility that Paul George and Russell Westbrook have talked to OKC about a trade before that all happened, because now the reports are coming out that Westbrook might be traded. I think they kind of looked at the picture and were like, all right, this team just isn't good enough to win a championship or get farther in the playoffs. Like, we don't have the depth. We don't have the money. They tried to move Steven Adams most likely and get some other pieces, and it just couldn't happen. So I think it was OKC realizing it, and then Paul George and Russell Westbrook being like, we're never going to win a championship here.
I don't know what Westbrook knew. Because Westbrook unfollowed Paul George like 30 minutes after the trade was announced. I feel like Russell Westbrook was a little bit more blindsided than that, because he just, I don't know. Like, are we really following guys for if we knew this was out there? I feel like he didn't know.
It's tough to say, but the reports came out that said that Westbrook had talked about getting traded like a couple days prior than last night. So
interesting.
I don't know. I mean, and Westbrook also is a guy who would probably just be pissed off if you didn't want to play with him and you think Kawhi is better, which we all would agree he is. So, I mean.
Yeah, so, I guess so.
getting over to the actual trade, like, do you guys think that the Clippers gave up too much in the trade, or it's just right because, hey, they're landing two superstars. They're going to be relevant. They might even be just as relevant as the Lakers for the next couple of years, and those picks will not turn out to be anything crazy if they're this good, other than maybe the 26th pick.
Oh, this is an easy one. I'll take this one, because I found out because of social media about a week ago, you're really stupid if you give away first picks and you mortgage your future, right? No one does that. Who in the world would do such a thing to give away so many picks when they're for player now? What about the future, right? I mean, that was the narrative when the Los Angeles Lakers did a better deal, by the way. There's so many protections on the Lakers picks compared to, I mean, whatever, if the Clippers somehow were drafting first in the draft for the next 4 to 5 years, OKC would have those picks. The Lakers and Rob Pelinka and all his inexperience, quote unquote, didn't do anything like that. So, of course, I'm being sarcastic. And, of course, I'm really pissed off because Twitter says one thing one day and the next thing the next day. But, I mean, the app is also free. So what can we do? So did they give up too much? No. The story that I tell all the time on Full Access Hoops, or anybody that will listen, my son and I are watching a Rockets game against the Warriors. They put up a graphic of Westbrook, Durant, Ibaka, and Harden all on OKC. And my son looked up and he's like, wait, they were all on the same team? And I was like, yes, they were. And my point is, and I say this all the time in our chats, all of this is very finite, right? If you have a chance to get star players, if you have a chance to win a championship, you know, I had a discussion with someone on Twitter earlier. They're like, well, would you, looking back, would you given up that championship to keep DeRozan and compete, you know, for titles or try to get a championship? Or would you rather just hit that one title and lose Kawhi as a one-year rental? And I would say to that, go ask the New York Knicks. It was 1970 the last time they won, right? Since the Nixon administration. Go ask them if they would take one title since 1972 or whatever it is. Or would they compete, air quotes, against the Jordan Bulls in the 90s or compete in the 2000s? So to me, you can never give up too much if you can get stars. If you think in some weird spectrum, some way, that some of these picks over the next 4 years are somehow going to be better than Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on the same team, then don't make the move. But obviously, that's not going to be the case. I mean, you're looking at two players that are today destined for the Hall of Fame and can only get better in their prime. You make that deal 10 times out of 10 if it were me.
Yeah, so when I first read the report, I thought you gave up 6-round picks for a player. Because, yeah, we say this, you know, the 6 first-round picks turn into Kawhi and Paul George. But that's actually a simple trade, like getting Paul George, boom, swapping him for 6 picks plus the players and everything. 6 picks is way too much. Is it 5 or 6?
I believe it's 5 picks and 2 swaps.
And 2 swaps, right. I was thinking it was only 1 swap. So that's 5 first-round picks and 2 swaps. At first, I thought it was too much. But as Jay said, you know, if you're the Clippers, if Kawhi is going to be the best free agent you've acquired in history, you have to do it. I mean, he says, give me help, which makes sense. You already have a couple of young pieces in there that work and some couple good more contracts. You have to do it. You don't have any other choice. You have to compete. You have to, you know, toughen up against the LAs and, well, not the Warriors anymore, but the type of strong teams in the league right now. And, well, as mentioning the Warriors, as the Warriors go down with Klay's injury and then KD leaving, I think this is a really good chance for any team to jump on any sort of like deal that instantly turns them into championship contenders. And that's what the Clippers did here. And I can understand why they probably, you know, they were rushed in time, so they did have to give up all of the first round picks and the swaps. But I mean, at the end, it seems like it's going to work for them. It seems like PG and Kawhi are happy. They have the rest of the team rounded out with decent role players. So they had to do it. No other choice there.
So again, Jay, me, and I both harp on this at Full Access Hoops, and you guys both said great points. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a lot of picks, but as Nick mentioned, those picks early on, they're going to be high draft picks. You're going to have Kawhi and Paul George on this roster for a lot of those picks. So it's not like these are going to be lottery picks, or at least they shouldn't be lottery picks. Right. They're lottery picks. This is gone really bad.
That's another pod we have to do,
Ben. Yeah.
And I think you look at the Clippers, and they almost have a safety net because they made the playoffs last year with a lot of the same guys coming back. So even if, let's say, you know, knock on wood, Kawhi were to get hurt and Paul George is your best player with the other players they have, probably still going to be a playoff team, not going to be as high or as competitive. And I think also a safety net, you look in the situation, you have Shamit, you have a Zubac who you just re-signed, you have Harrell, all relatively young guys. So they kind of make the young guys. So like So like you're moving forward and you don't have to worry about them aging too bad. And then you also, like you mentioned, Jorge mentioned, Pat Bev's on a good contract and Lou Will's on a good contract. So like this is a deep team. You look at the Lakers, we'll talk about them later. Their team, even if they added Kawhi, was not going to be deep at all. And this is better for Kawhi in the sense that, hey, I can get my load management. There was even question probably went back to Toronto. Is he going to be able to rest as many games this year with Gasol getting older and Lowry getting older? I think this Clippers situation, like we talked about, is just ideal for him. And then they just had to pull the trigger. Now, not only were they competing for other teams to get Kawhi, they were competing with the Lakers. And we know that that battle's been going on for years. They want to be just as relevant as them. And this is a major step in that direction.
Yeah, and I think if you look at the Clippers' setup and their system, it almost just fits Kawhi better, like the way they focus on defense first. Like, not that the Lakers aren't going to be a solid defensive team. They very well might be. But I think that's clearly like a Showtime Laker team. Yeah. They're going to be looking to score a lot, where this Clippers team is really going to grind you out. But also now they have so much firepower to really, you know, pack a punch with having Lou off the bench and Paul George and Kawhi in the lineup.
And they could go defense heavy, too, with some of the pieces they have.
Right.
And one thing, other thing I'd say, and full disclosure for anyone listening, you know, I am employed by Microsoft, former home of Steve Ballmer. And the guy who was tasked with, you know, leading Microsoft for all the years that he did is the guy that will push the chips to the front of the table and say, let's go win, right? I mean, you know, Steve Ballmer at his time at Microsoft was competing against Apple and all these other tech companies from Silicon Valley coming after his company, right? So that guy, the same guy who has that fire in his belly to compete in such a competitive marketplace, is the same guy that's going to trade draft picks to go get the best team to go head-to-head with the Lakers and Staples Centers. Because, I mean, this is just about the Lakers as much as it is about winning championships. But a person who has that in his DNA is going to do what he has to do to get the team that he needs to win. And I would just say, you know, the other 29 teams should thank Jesus and Adam Silver that there is a salary cap. Because if there was not – this would be a 2K team in Inglewood for the Clippers. But I just want to make that point with who the rest of the league is dealing with in terms of an owner who's motivated to succeed.
And I think some credit goes to Jerry West, Lawrence Frank, Doc Rivers for getting some of the situation they're in terms of the salary, but then also getting the extra picks, which they use in this trade, the two extra Miami picks. They're not probably making this trade if they don't have those two assets to just throw in there.
Right. I agree.
So anything else we want to touch on in terms of the acquisition? I guess we can look at the Clippers as a team. What is your expectation for them going to the season? Obviously, it dramatically changed from what it's been probably the last 10 years, last 20, for a really long time, right?
Yeah. Ever for the Clippers. Yeah. I'm the elder statesman on this pod, and I can tell you the Clippers have been living in futility since I was born. Like the Clippers have not – I mean, you trace it back – to Bill Walton breaking his foot when he went to the San Diego Clippers and never playing for them and then going to Boston and winning a championship in 86, being sixth man of the year. The Clippers have just dwelled in futility for a generation. So this is a new day for them. And I think as a team on the floor, we talked about it earlier about defensively how they'll look. I mean, schematically on the perimeter, you have two of the best wing defenders in the NBA, Patrick Beverley, who is a junkyard dog. I mean, he made Lonzo Ball's professional debut just a pain in the ass that time when Lonzo first came onto the court in his first game as a rookie. So defensively, I like what they could do. Again, offensively, I think they also have enough firepower now to, you know, score against teams. But I think where their bread and butter will be made is having, you know, Kawhi lock down one guy on one side of the floor, Paul George on the other side. It reminds me of early Miami Heat days, as Jorge well knows, when prime LeBron and D-Wade on the wings. Yep. Or going back even a little further to mid-90s Bulls with Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan being the two best wing defenders in the world at that time, quite frankly. So I think they'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, I don't think it's a hot take at all saying the Clippers are instantly or have instantly become a top two team in the Western Conference. Dalton and the Rockets may want to fight me, but I think it's you know, it's fair to say that it's between the Lakers and the Clippers. Both LA teams are atop their conference. The Warriors may also disagree. But the Clippers have immediately jumped from, like, fringe playoff team. They were, like, the eighth. They were the eighth seed. Because the Warriors were the first this year.
Warriors were a two seed.
All right. So the Clippers made this huge jump from, like, seventh seed to possibly one or two seed at least,
right,
which is big enough. Well, of course, assuming they're healthy and everything works out as planned and everything. So there's nothing they can complain about, losing picks, not getting whoever. Boom, you've instantly become a championship contender just like that. And you got like the finals MVP, just won a championship. What else can you ask for? That's a crazy win for them in this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, this team's got depth, which is, I think, what stands out the most. And I think you made a great point, Jay, on comparing him to the Bulls. Like, I saw, I don't want to say, it wasn't a meme, just like one of those Photoshop pictures of the Bulls lineup next to the Clippers lineup. And, I mean, yeah. I just love the look of Paul George alongside Kawhi Leonard. Throw in Patrick Beverley. That defense right there is enough for me to get out of my seat. You throw in Montrezl Harrell. You still have Zubac, who showed a lot of good flashes between LA and the Clippers. And you still got some of these young guys. And who knows what else they do? I mean, if Iggy gets bought out, perhaps, or maybe they make a move for Iggy down the line just for some more competitive spark off the bench. But the Clippers are just deep, and they have a lot of defense. And you throw in the fact that Paul George is coming off a career best 28 points per game. And Kawhi is just, going to be 26? Coming off a finals MVP or 27, it's just set up for the next handful of years. Obviously, the windows seem to be a lot shorter than we anticipate. Obviously, the Celtics were supposed to dominate for the next decade, and that's changed. But as of right now, the Clippers are set up for the next 5 years, arguably.
Yeah, at least till the contracts run out. You know, 4-year deals, you know, they'll probably re-sign most likely if things go well. And just to run down the roster to give you an idea of who they have right now, Patrick Beverley, Lou Williams, Paul George, Landry Schmidt, Kawhi Leonard, Mo Harkless, Zubac, Montrezl Harrell. So, like, and I think a lot of people forgot they got Mo Harkless, who's been a solid wing for Portland for a long time. Got him for free. So now that's another guy you have a little bit more depth. And like Corey mentioned, who else are they going to sign? Now they're really attractive to a lot of these, you know, remaining free agents, because this is a championship contender. I think it's Western Conference Finals or bust for this team. You know, you want to end up in the Western Conference Finals. If you lose in seven games, it is what it is. Going against the Lakers, if they have a good team, that's most likely what it's going to be as of right now. So expectations are different, but they have the ability to be the best team in the league.
Yeah.
No question. But that's just like that.
Now, do we want to touch anything else on the Clipper side, or we should move over to OKC, the Raptors, and then the Lakers?
I think it's OKC time.
Okay. It's OKC time, and we talked about this, you know, pretty much they were in a situation where they weren't going to get much better, and they had to make moves. Jay, what are you thinking?
It's weird, right? Because on the one hand, I think Sam Presti is one of the handful of guys that are really good at what he does in the NBA. I mean, I think Presti's up there. I mean, David Griffin's had himself a month and is kind of the name on the tip of everybody's tongue right now. I'm looking at Jorge right now, thinking about what Riles and that group has done in Miami with no cap space. So, I mean, that was impressive in and of itself. Daryl Morey, of course, is, you know, the godfather in a lot of ways of the sort of modern NBA. So a lot of great front offices, but I still put Sam Presti as an executive near the top of that list. So on the one hand, I understand that Presti said, okay, Paul George is coming, asking for a trade request. You know, we can either see what we can get on this trade and sort of build for the future. Also looking at our, you know, looking at our books and seeing where we are financially, what we're up against, what our, you know, as we've talked about a second ago, what our future looks like in terms of playoff success. So Presti by far made the best deal that he possibly could have made. I've seen some people compare it to the Herschel Walker Dallas Cowboy trade, aka known as the Great Train Robbery. I would, as a Cowboys fan, I would push back on that, because a Herschel Walker that Minnesota got is not the same Paul George that the Clippers are getting. So I don't think that's an apples to apples comparison. But that being said, a tremendous deal. That's a deal that, if forced to make it, I think I would make. And I think, you know, Presti deserves credit for that. On the other hand, I kind of question, I guess, you know, why he had to do it. I mean, I understand, and we talked about it, and we'll touch on this more, the idea of player empowerment, right? Like, you know, the contracts, and I think Ramona Shelburne in her piece said this, you know, like, the contracts are not as, or no more valuable than the paper they're written on, right? So in other words, if Paul George comes to you, max contract or not, and says, hey, I want out, then it's a player's league. You know, it's not the NFL, right? You have to move him, or he's just going to be, you know, pissed off, a disgruntled star. But at the same time, moving him after a year, I'm conflicted. On the one hand, Presti did the deal he needed to do, but on the other hand, that just seemed really freaking easy. You know, Paul George went to the office and said, I want to trade, and you traded prime Paul George. And now you got a load for him. You got a haul. And maybe you're tearing this thing down and you're starting all over anyway. So it's a moot point, right? And the next move is probably either Westbrook or Adams, or both, quite frankly. But it just seemed like – just seemed really easy, right? Like, he just went in. I mean, am I overthinking it, or – I don't know.
I think I think, like, the package is just amazing. It's really hard to turn down. I mean, this is probably one of the best trade packages you could ever get. And there's one thing I think from the OKC side, it's leaked that Paul leverage is lost. And he also had them in a situation where he was, we didn't really talk about this, there was a Toronto offer out there too. They were talking to Toronto at the same time. Right. So what Presti was doing was he was leveraging Toronto against the Clippers. And Toronto really didn't even believe that they wanted to trade with them. He was just using them as leverage. Mm-hmm. So I think he capitalized on the opportunity. And I think the reason it must have been so easy is in the back of his head, he has to think, like, this team's not going to championship team. We did what we could, gave them two shots. You know, they didn't maintain health. The depth isn't there. I think it might actually be time for a rebuild.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it. You saw it in the Blazers series. The Blazers didn't, you know, talent-wise, they I guess some people say they were comparable, but I don't think they really were, you know, assuming Westbrook is this MVP and Paul George is this almost, you know, close to MVP player. And then you have a really good, you know, starting center in Steven Adams, who was going up against the Butter Cheese and Enes Kanter. on paper, that should have been OKC in 5 or in 6. But then look at what happened. So that's the moment when Sam Presti and the rest of the front office was like, you know what? This team is not going to do it. And it's not surprising to me. I'm once again going to hop on the Russell Westbrook Bass train, but it's not surprising to me. He's looking to trade him away.
It sounds like you're driving it right now, but.
Yes, a little bit. So but I don't disagree with his idea of just breaking it down. Because, I mean, the fan base can get as mad as they want if he trades Westbrook or if he does whatever to him. But what else are you going to do? Would you rather leave in mediocrity for, what, the next 5 years? And keep, you know, losing in the first round for nothing. Mm-hmm. So, and we just said it earlier, you cannot turn down. That's pretty much seven. That's really five, but 7 first round picks.
Right.
Because they do have the chance to swap for a better option in the other 2 years. How do you turn that down?
Right.
There are only so many players you wouldn't trade in NBA history. You wouldn't trade for pretty much 7 first round picks. There are only a handful of them. And I think Paul George isn't one of them. He's a guy that, you know, he's coming to you. He's saying, I want out of here. And a team comes to you and say, we're giving you 7 first-round picks. Well, as I said, 5 plus a 2. We're giving you 7. You have to do it. There's no way you don't do it. And I really think that Sam Presti has done a couple of very smart moves over the last couple of years, despite the signing Westbrook to the contract and everything, which I'm not going to get into. So, and this is just another one of those. I really think that maybe he doesn't even, I don't think he even holds on to all of the picks. He might as well just trade two or three of them for something else decent. Who knows, right? He's done a pretty good job thus far, and I don't think that the Thunder is done yet. He's going to keep exploring ways to make the team better, and I trust him. I trust him, and this was a really good deal for both him and the Thunder overall with all the picks, and even getting decent players back, a young player in Shai, and decent forward replacement for Paul George and Gallinari. Of course, he's nowhere near, but he can shoot the three ball. He had a pretty much a career renaissance year this past season with the Clippers. So he did just fine, all things considered, and the situation he was pretty much backed against the wall in.
So to a degree, I almost want to know what the scenario is like when Paul George walks in and goes, "I want to be traded." And Sam goes, "Eh, I got you for 3 years. Like, I guess you're gonna have to cry about it." Like I think Russell Westbrook can actually do something. So I guess you're gonna have to figure this out. But I'm not trading you. I wonder what that looks like.
Paul George Day is tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow, huh?
Yeah, all right, we'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk about this at the grill. But at the same time, if Paul George demanding the trade. I mean, I think getting Shai Gilgeous Alexander, too, as a part of this is a nice piece. Yep. We saw some nice flashes from him last year. And that also kind of signifies that Westbrook's on the way out when you get a point guard who I don't really think can fit well with Russell Westbrook personally. You still have Dennis Schroeder on the roster. So you're looking at one of these guys get moved. And I want
to forget Raymond Felton. Please don't forget Felton.
Yeah, <Errol Felton. laughs> So I also think you're looking at this from the perspective of you had these 2 years where you tried to make it work. It didn't work. And I honestly want to say the fact that we knew they made Adam, Schroeder, and Robertson all available this offseason. And I got to believe the fact that they didn't probably get any good offers, that they were like, well, shit, this isn't working how it is. And the second tier guys in our roster that we could move to free up cap to build around Westbrook and Paul George, there's just not any offers there. So for us to actually try and get better and mix this up, we have to move either Paul George or Russell Westbrook or either or maybe both. So I think that's where the decision ultimately led is after those first couple of days where they just couldn't get anything for Adams and Schroeder. So this was the next move on the table. And like you mentioned, Jorge and Jay and Nick, you got seven picks overall. You got a young prospect. You got Gallinari who's coming off the books end of this year, I believe.
Yeah.
It made sense for OKC in the short term, and now it's depending on if you can move Westbrook. Do you want to move Westbrook, and do you want to go full rebuild? Because that's now the next question is what do you do with Westbrook? And also, to Jorge's point, I just want to say, these picks, too, I think it's a great point that these are the kind of picks you get seven of them. You package one or two with Westbrook to help somebody feel okay with taking on that giant contract and staying with Adams.
Right.
And get something decent in return at the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, he has options. No, he has no forced move right here because even if, let's say, he has to keep Westbrook and he can't move him, he has picks now. He can go and get other players. It doesn't necessarily have to be – and he can dump contracts. Like, he has enough picks where he can just be like – we talked about it. Some of the Clipper picks might not be great, probably going to be between 20 and 30, probably more like 25 to 30, and then maybe the late ones will be okay. Hate to say this, Jorge. Maybe the ones from the Heat could be okay depending on what happens. Yeah, they might not be lottery picks, but they might be, early 20s or whatever it might be, late teens, something like that.
Yeah, definitely.
So you could flip those, and you could always maybe get a guy like Kevin Love or something if you wanted to. Like, there's different options out there, or we could go the full rebuild. It's just the question is, who's going to take Westbrook? Like, who's going to take that contract, and how do they value him? Like, I think if you trade a player of his stature, you want a good return, but no one wants to give a return like that when the contract is due so much money, like $40+ million for a player like Russell Westbrook, who did not have a good season last year.
Yeah, I think that's funny because I heard, I think it's Bill Simmons was on Stephen A. Smith, I want to say, and he was sort of perplexed by the moves the Knicks had been making. And he made an interesting point, one that I hadn't thought of. His point was, he thought the Knicks should have, kept their powder dry in terms of their cap space. Obviously, you have to spend so much of it, right? But his thought was sort of this very scenario, right, that there are going to be players that are going to get moved. There are going to be bad contracts that teams want to come off of. And so the Knicks could have used that cap space to absorb someone like Westbrook. You get a star in the building. Maybe you go for Westbrook. Maybe you make a play for Bradley Beal. Who knows? And so that was just one name that came off the top of my head for, you know, who might try to leverage a Westbrook trade. I think Oklahoma City goes full rebuild, try to recreate the magic they did when they got, you know, Durant and Westbrook and Harden and Ibaka under their, you know, under contract, you know, the first time around. I think, you know, they were playing with superstars for a couple of years. Presti did it, you know, give them all the credit in the world for trying to rebuild it on the fly. Doesn't seem like this iteration of the Thunder is working right now. I think OKC kind of falls in the mold of a Utah, maybe an Indiana. No disrespect there, Corey. That you kind of build via the draft, via the trade. I don't know how many stars are necessarily trying to get to Oklahoma City. So I think I don't think you necessarily build around Westbrook if you can move him. I think you try to move him for more picks or more flexibility on the cap, and just, you know, try to reload. It was fun while it lasted. And you go get ready for the next chapter in Oklahoma City Thunder basketball, I think.
And I got to throw in a quick point from one of our listeners in the chat. It makes you think, what did the Clippers offer for Bradley Beal? There was a lot of talk about them being interested in him. And then Washington probably had to turn down a really good offer. I don't know if it's the same as a Paul George level offer, but like.
Sorry, I just want to say, we talked about this last week. We don't know, like, we all concluded that John Wall is probably running the team, right? Because there's no GM in Washington yet, right? So that's a great question from the chat.
John Wall is running the team.
Otto Porter probably turned down a great deal. Who knows? Who knows who the hell is sitting in that office? I didn't mean to cut you off, Nick, but I'm still operating on the assumption. Anytime I hear some Wizard news, I'm like, shit, I'm telling who's.
Like, well, exactly.
I think that Billy King is running the front office.
Oh, gosh.
That's what happens though. Like, if you don't have anybody in office, which they haven't for months now, like, God, what are they doing? They could have just missed out on a really good offer. Like, maybe it's not the same as Paul George, because obviously Kawhi said he wanted Paul George specifically, I think, at some point in the chat with the Clippers. Like, they probably turned down multiple first-round picks and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Gallinari, who I didn't really touch on. There's a possibility you could flip Gallinari, and maybe if you take a bad contract back, if you're going that rebuild route and getting another first-round pick, or he just gets bought out and signs with someone else.
Yeah, because he's an expiring too, so he does have some trade value and is a quite decent player himself. So
yeah,
it's interesting. I mean, OKC has a lot of avenues they can travel. I don't think there's necessarily a ton of pressure. I'm sure Westbrook is trying to push his way out right now because he kind of speculates, hey, we're not going to really be that good, especially with how stacked the West is. But anything else we want to touch on from the OKC side?
I think Russell Westbrook's out. I don't know where.
Give me three trades.
Are you projecting? Or you? What are you? You're like, I want him out. You know, it's gonna be in South Beach, right? This is what happens when you.
No, that's one of the teams.
You know, that's one of the teams that he might go to.
Yes, I know that's a possibility, and I've been all day like, because I've seen the reports, and I've seen like, oh yeah, the Heat are interested, and they like what they have in Westbrook, and I'm like.
The Godfather will make it happen, man.
I just want to go on the record down right now and say this. I will go really, really nuts if Miami does trade for Westbrook. I don't know what I'm. I don't even want to think about it. I don't even want to think about it because, you know, I'm not Russell Westbrook's best friend.
I mean, let's talk about top three destinations where Westbrook could end up this season if he was traded. You know, I think we'd all agree Miami is a possibility destination.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Be realistic, it is.
I would say Miami. I would say Minnesota because they have some expiring.
Minnesota.
Possibly flip. And then, like, an outside dark horse, like San Antonio. But, like, I couldn't imagine Pop, like, he would have a heart attack watching Westbrook drive up and down the court taking some reckless-ass shots. And then he could bench one time, and Westbrook and Pop would be fighting. So I think it's almost like Minnesota or Miami, I feel like, are, like, the top two destinations, unless some team comes out of left field and, like, makes, like, a God plan offer for him.
Well, that's the thing. Like, are you going to have to make a really good offer, or is it going to just have to be an okay offer? And, like, maybe you give them some picks and then you give them some bad contracts as well because they're going to a rebuild. Like, a team that I saw mentioned, and this kind of does make sense, and they need a point guard really bad, Orlando Magic.
Ooh, that's interesting. The fan base would be excited, I'm pretty sure.
I mean, that's the only way for them to get that level of star. I mean, if we're being honest, if Orlando wants to get that level of superstar, unless you're going to draft him, you would have to get him in some kind of trade like this. And they do have some assets that they could move. They do have some friendly contracts. And it wouldn't be the worst fit. There's a defensive-minded and Steve Clifford. So Westbrook could be hit a little bit better. That's an interesting thought. Maybe it'd be the Markelle Fultz gets flipped again and we still don't see
Markelle. I mean, he does have $9 million on the books for him. And there's other guys, like other bad contracts they have. They have Mozgov on the books. They could use that contract to flip them. Aaron Gordon makes 19. Fournier makes 17. So they actually would be a team contract-wise could make it work. And Markelle Fultz is kind of interesting, I guess. Maybe if you give him a couple picks or something.
Mo Bamba, too. Like, you maybe give him they haven't played a lot of Mo Bamba, so it could be a way to steal him from them and maybe get one of those wings in Isaac, or I can't say his name, but it starts with an I. Awunda or
Awandu?
Awandu. There you go. Awandu. That was close. Mace Windu, Awandu. Come on.
What about,
I don't think they trade Bamba, but I think they would maybe open to moving Aaron Gordon because it looks like his best position is power forward. Isaac's best position is power forward. Long term, it doesn't make sense. They just signed Aminu. They have other guys. Like, I could see that as a real possibility.
Mm-hmm. What about Dallas?
No way. I don't think there's too much usage between him and Luka.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, I don't think you want to mess with Luka having Westbrook in his ear.
Maybe Phoenix. Maybe they say we're sending you to basketball hell. Do whatever you want next to Devin Booker. Best of luck.
So,
no defense squad.
Here's the thing. I think, and I will defend the Russell Westbrook slander that we've had on this first 40 minutes of this pod. I think of Westbrook sort of like Jimmy Butler in the sense that I don't think he's a bad – I don't think he's a bad teammate. I don't think he's a bad – I definitely don't think he's a bad guy. But I think he's just – I mean, I think he's sort of like you have to meet his intensity, though. Like, if you don't – like, Russell's – I think Russ is at a 10. If you're not at a 10, you do things like sign an extension to be in Oklahoma City when you don't really want to be in Oklahoma City, right? If you're not like Jimmy, I don't think Jimmy had a problem in Minnesota per se. I think he wanted Kat and Wiggins, you know, if this is your team, then put me in my place, right? Stand up to me. I think Westbrook is kind of that guy. I don't think he's a bad teammate. I just think he's never really had – I mean, look who his co-stars are, right? James Harden, Kevin Durant, Paul George, those are not, I mean, great players, but those dudes are not alphas, right, in terms of personality, right? They're not Mamba mentality guys, right? I think Westbrook's like that. Now, we all know that there's some good and bad with having Mamba mentality, quote unquote, right? But there's a certain personality, like Kobe Bryant didn't mind being challenged. He respected that, right? I think Westbrook is kind of that player. That's all I want to say. This is in terms of the Westbrook pod, but I just want to say, I think – so, yeah, so you do need to have a strong locker room to have a guy like Westbrook. So I think he actually could work in San Antonio because I think it's a strong culture there, and I think he would respond to something like that. But if you have just a bunch of also-rans on the team, no, I don't think that's a good fit for him.
I will make one thing about a fit as well. We could argue that the fits in OKC have never been amazing. Yes, like. He's never had shooters. His best skill is driving to the rim, and he's never had space. Like, it's amazing in some of the stuff he does. And, like, let's not act like he's a terrible player. There's some question for his efficiency and his shot making. But in certain situations, like, let's hypothetically swap him out with – I'm not saying he's on Giannis's level, but put him on that Bucks team, and now he has the spacing he needs to operate. He needs a stretch five. He needs someone that can shoot and space the floor a little bit. Orlando could possibly be that place. Vucevic can stretch out the three-point line, give him a good pick-and-pop partner. So I think there's a possibility of him going to another situation and being a little bit better. But on the flip side, I think he's had knee surgeries the last three seasons, and he's getting past 30. He's going to be making 40-plus mil. His best basketball isn't in front of him unless it's an amazing fit. So there's concerns both ways, positive and negative, where he's getting unfair treatment. And then it's also on one side, it's like, okay, some of it's deserved.
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be hard.
Definitely never had the best fit. I think we can agree on that, especially like in the shooter front. I mean, those OKC teams have had like Jeremy Grant as like their second best shooter behind Paul George, possibly.
Paul George has pretty much was their best shooter last year. Like, there's nobody that they really even had a respect in terms of 3-point shooting. And it goes back, like, even to the fit with KD. Like, he never was an amazing fit with KD just because they didn't find the right chemistry on the court when it was necessary. Like, if you look at them, they could have ran pick and pop, and that would have been deadly for like 10 years. But
Durant ran an ISO basketball around Russell Westbrook commanding the basketball and doing his own thing.
Yeah, they were never eye to eye trying to do it as a team.
Right.
Like, We've done enough on Westbrook and OKC. Let's talk about Toronto before we talk about the Lakers, because this is a team that low-key kind of got screwed. I mean, it was obviously expected when they made the trade that he wasn't guaranteed to sign. But from Toronto's perspective, what do you think's going on? Obviously, they just re-signed they signed Stanley Johnson 2 years, I think $7 million, and they lost Danny Green.
Stanley Johnson?
Yeah, they signed Stanley Johnson.
Breaking news. Here it is.
I had forgot he existed. Like.
He bounced around. I want to say he went from Detroit to Milwaukee to New Orleans and then a free agent.
Oh, right. He's been a free agent for the whatever ever since the Pelicans waived him, right?
Yep.
Jay, you want to go first?
Sure. Why not? So I think Toronto is actually not in a bad – of the teams – well, no, I won't say that either. I don't think they're in a bad position, right? Because I still don't know quite what Philly is. I think they're promising, but I still don't know exactly what they are. Milwaukee, again, looks good. Probably the front runner, I would say. But, I mean, Toronto also beat them. Granted, one of the big reasons for them beating them is no longer on the team. But they're basically running it back with the same squad, a team that, prior to Kawhi showing up, had been successful. You know, perennial playoff team, Eastern Conference Finals, 50-win team, et cetera, et cetera. So I actually don't think – building around Siakam will be that bad for them. I could see them being no worse than probably worst case scenario, a 3 seed in the East.
No, you know, somehow. No, no way.
You think they're higher or lower?
I think they're way lower. They're without way Kawhi lower. And Danny Green. Like Kawhi Leonard, we got to remember Kawhi literally. I mean, like they had good moments during the season, don't get me wrong, but also Danny Green had a really good year for them. And then Kawhi is Kawhi. Like they're not beating.
Oh, okay, well, okay, let's run it. Okay, I will grant you Philadelphia, and I will grant you Milwaukee. Do you think today that Boston is better than Toronto?
No. Yes.
Yeah, I think so. I think Brooklyn's better. I think Pacers are better as well.
Oh, whoa. Now we got to just hold the press.
Toronto, like you have to remember the year before they had DeMar DeRozan. They had DeMar DeRozan, and now they have no one to replace that scoring. Siakam definitely improved, but like –
I would just like to say we're going 2019-2020 Nets, not 2020-2021 Nets.
Yeah. The Nets, all they did is swap out D'Angelo Russell with Kyrie Irving, upgrade, and then they added different pieces on the bench that are all going to balance out. I mean, DeAndre Jordan's easy swap, Torian Prince and Amari Carroll, that's a fine swap. I mean, Jared Dudley, you're not, like, crying over those minutes. And then a lot of the young guys are going to take a jump. So I definitely think the Nets would be in better spot than them. And all the players on Toronto, other than Siakam, aren't going to get better. The only thing on Toronto that I think is really promising is OG, like, hardly played at all last year. He's going to come back, and he'll probably be pretty good.
Van Vliet, we found a star in Van Vliet, right? I mean
– yeah, well, if he's popping babies out every month.
I don't know. I'll leave it there. But I just – one, I like how we sort of popped into the Brooklyn buzz there for about 5 seconds. That was also great. He had those stats for me on the radio. I was not prepared for that assault. But I still say Toronto is actually not in horrible shape. I'll leave it there.
I think what makes them not in horrible shape is that they have a ton of expiring contracts. Serge Ibaka expiring, Marc Gasol expiring, Kyle Lowry expiring. Yeah. That's like literally $70 million in expiring contracts right there.
There you go. So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they just won a championship.
Yeah.
So can they really be like, are they really that man? If you know, this man came in for a year, delivered a championship, of course he could have stayed, but you know, the Bucks are only getting better. The Pacers are getting better. The Celtics, whatever they're trying to do, the Nets, look at what they just did. So I don't know, like, as much as I like to say that they're angry and everything, can they really be angry after just winning a championship?
First one in their history, too. So, I mean, that's pretty important.
Yeah. Like, as you said, they always knew there was a really fair chance that Kawhi was just bouncing after trading for him. And, well, Danny Green just bounced as well. The Cavs situation was scary, too. But, I mean, I think they would rather just keep their championship and keep it as it is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they went all in on last season. Last season was the prize season. You had a situation where you got Marc Gasol as well to go all in. You got Kawhi Leonard. You got your chip, the first one in franchise history, the first one for your country. I mean, that's what you wanted. And as you guys said, you now have Lowry expiring, Gasol expiring, Ibaka expiring. I do not think this is a home court advantage team in the NBA next season. I think they're competitive because you do have a bunch of champions now on this roster. So this is a team that knows how to win, knows how to grind out basketball games. But they had really bad offensive stretches without Kawhi with Kawhi last year. Now they're losing Kawhi, and they're putting Stanley Johnson in his place. So it's not like there's offense coming.
They're putting OG in his place. Well,
OG, right, fair.
Stanley Johnson.
Siakam, I do think, gets better. But I think this is a team that maybe someone comes knocking. Maybe Minnesota comes knocking about Kyle Lowry at some point this year.
Or Andrew Wiggins.
Or Andrew Wiggins, maybe.
This is a team that goes for Westbrook.
Or this could be a team that goes for Westbrook. But I think if you're Toronto, it was about last year. And now you're probably looking to the future. And all of these guys, as Nick mentioned, if I was Kawhi, I wasn't going to go back to Toronto. It's because I think this team is – last year was the peak of the mountain. And now we're on this downward climb because all these guys are older. Do I think Siakam's a part of the future? Hell yeah. But I think everything around Siakam is what you're going to not want to be around in the next couple of years. And Kawhi got out a year early, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I think you could look at it from another perspective, though. Like, maybe he thought they could have a chance to compete this year. I don't think he really just didn't necessarily love Toronto, because then he's going to the following season with just him and Siakam re-signed. And then they have full cap spot in 2021 where – there's like a ton of big free agents like Giannis, Bradley Beal, Rudy Gobert. You know, there's a lot of big names. So I think it was just like he didn't really love Toronto, but I agree. They got their chip. They went in. They went full mode. They knew they'd have to probably overpay Marc Gasol for last season and this season. But, hey, it works out. And it's not like they're stuck with these contracts any longer than this season. And who knows? Maybe they're able to flip one because, like Corey mentioned, they're expiring and a team who's contending might be like, all right, we don't mind overpaying this player for 1 year.
Right.
I guess we should talk about – go ahead.
No, I just said right on point.
Oh, okay. let's go over to the Lakers front. Obviously, they were waiting on Kawhi, and pretty much since they've been waiting, most of the good role players have got snatched up. They did sign a couple people. DeMarcus Cousins, Danny Green, KCP re-signed, Quinn Cook, Rajon Rondo re-signed. What do you think – and they also signed Jared Dudley, big name. But nah, Jared's my boy. But
he was too scared of Ben Simmons, I heard.
What are we thinking about the Lakers in terms of like how they react to this situation? Do you think they're still feeling good with the team? Obviously, they made the trade for AD, but their roster isn't necessarily as complete as they would like.
Yeah. So again, the paradox that is social media, specifically NBA Twitter. 48 hours ago. Earlier this week, the New York Knicks story came out. They knew they weren't going to get Kawhi Leonard. You know, it was a three-horse race, basically. So they canceled their meeting with Kawhi Leonard. You know, why do this dog and pony show? We're not going to get you. We'll move on. Of course, social media reacted, the Knicks, typical Knicks. Idiots, you take that meeting. What's wrong with you? If you got a chance with Kawhi, you take the meeting. God, this is what's wrong with the Knicks. Typical New York Knicks. Fast forward to this week. Lakers are in the hunt for Kawhi Leonard. They know it's a gamble. They know it's a risk. On the one hand, they're trying to make a super team. And if they do, then great. They're probably going to run the league for the next couple of years. If they don't, all these role players that we've talked about start getting snatched up left and right. Turns out the Lakers did get Kawhi. I opened Twitter again, much to my dismay. Lakers, ha-ha, LOL, Los Angeles Lakers, idiots. Why did you do that? You should have signed these role players. Jesus Christ. So – maybe we'll talk about social media on another pod. But despite all that noise, I actually think – I mean, this was the plan that the Lakers sort of had, right? This was the conundrum they were in. Do you go for Kawhi or do you spend that cap space filling out the roster? I actually think the people that they signed, some guys I like, some I'm not crazy about. I think I like Danny Green as a signing. I think 15 per, 2 years for 30 – a little rich for my blood, especially when, you know, you maybe could have had JJ for 12, although Danny Green's still a top defender, elite wing defender, I believe, still can knock down shots. So I think that gives him the advantage over Redick, in my opinion. I think he's maybe a couple years younger. I forget who came first.
I think a couple years.
Yeah, so I like Green there, maybe a little high, but I still like it. I like DeMarcus Cousins. I thought that always worked. I thought he and AD played well together in New Orleans. I think DeMarcus is just not healthy right now. I think he showed flashes in the playoffs. I think he just hadn't had a chance to get right. And I think another offseason will give him a chance to look like the DeMarcus that we're used to seeing. KCP, I mean, I think that's just a clutch, you know, just a dap up, a gentleman's handshake there. That one perplexes me the most, probably. Running back with Rondo, I don't mind as long as he's not getting starting point guard minutes. The point guard position is the one that concerns me the most. I thought McGee was great in spot minutes. He's fine. So this was the approach. I think that's okay. I mean, I think the Lakers missed out on some guys that they could have had on the roles and the bench, but I mean, they pretty much got the guys they were probably going to get, right? I mean, it's because it's the Lakers and it's funny to point and laugh, but I'm fine if I'm them. You got AD, you got LeBron, who's been resting since April, and he's going to be like the best offseason he's had since 2003, right? I think he'll be more than okay. I don't think, I mean, you went for Kawhi and you didn't get him. That happens. I mean, shit happens. I don't know. I think they did okay. I mean, some of these signings, I don't know about, but you know, mainly KCP, but the other guys, yeah, I think getting some more help on the point guard front would probably make me feel more comfortable about their team, maybe a little more help inside in the interior, but it's still AD and LeBron. I mean, I'm cool with that. I would take that.
Yeah, if you ask me, I think striking out on Kawhi was a blessing in disguise, if we're being honest, because I personally would rather take the depth rather than, you know, going all in on the three stars and then you know, you're risking injury, you're risking whatever, the fit doesn't work out well, whatever. So I think the Lakers were better off just spending the money on these solid role players. Don't forget Quinn Cook, who I really like. Yeah. I really like Quinn Cook. It's going to be tough to figure out who's going to be the starter, the starting point guard, because it's going to be either Rondo or Cook, unless the Lakers just go point LeBron, which I doubt. But as I said, I don't think the Lakers can be that mad, because at the end of the day, it's not like they didn't get anyone to make up for the fact that they didn't get Kawhi. They got a pretty decent shooter. I mean, yeah, but pretty decent player, great shooter and great defender in Danny Green. He was just an NBA champion. They got DeMarcus Cousins on a very cheap deal, which is great for him. And Jay, you mentioned the rest of the guys. No need to repeat them. So I think they definitely cannot complain. I mean, getting that third star would have been good, but then you think about it, and I don't think Kawhi would have been comfortable playing third riddle to LeBron and AD. And I think it would have just gave them way too many different problems, more than they would like. So I don't think they can be mad, because they did get people to make up for it.
I mean, Kawhi is plan A. This was plan B. Right. I think the Lakers understood that if they were going to have to wait, you know, 3 days, not even 6 days, that there was going to be a limited amount of free agents left at their disposal. Right. And I think especially after how fast these guys were going that first day, if anything, they knew what they were getting themselves into. They could have backed out right then if they wanted to go role player hunting. I think they knew KCP was going to hang around. I think they knew Rondo was going to hang around. Getting Quinn Cook, I think, is solid. So I think if you want LeBron to run point and Rondo to come off the bench, you can start Cook and have Cook just be a shooter out there in a lot of ways, probably. I like the Rondo signing because his relationship with DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis has already been fruitful. Time in Sacramento, DeMarcus Cousins and Rondo had a very good relationship. It carried over to New Orleans, so I like that fit, especially if you have Cousins and Rondo off the bench. That could be a nice pick-and-roll offense off the bench. Maybe not great at defending the pick-and-roll, but if you could at least be able to score off of it.
That's another story.
And, you know, the only thing I probably am a little bit sour. I mean, the KCP money, was it $8 million again he got? And then Danny Green getting 15. I would have liked to have seen them probably go half on both those guys just to get, like, Marcus Morris for more wing depth. I think that was, like, the only free agent I wish they had gotten, especially seeing him go for 2 years, $20 million to the San Antonio Spurs. I think his kind of grit and his versatility would have helped this roster a little bit more depth-wise. But overall, I mean, this is plan B, and I think taking a low-risk, high-reward on DeMarcus Cousins as they get healthy, can he be, you know, a 25-minute guy off the bench? I mean, you have McGee to split minutes with, who is a very serviceable center. So I think the Lakers made out with what they had at their arsenal. Yet again, you have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. There's already going to be two big mouths to feed. You want to have role players. Are these the ideal role players? Maybe not. But you had to go all in on Kawhi and try to get him. So I'm okay with the moves the Lakers have made.
Yeah, I think it's easy to say in hindsight they should have went the role player route, but obviously they didn't know with Kawhi, and they went for the big swing. That's what the Lakers do. You know, they went for the big swing last year with LeBron. They got him. This year they went with AD. They tried to combo that with Kawhi. It didn't work out. And like Corey mentioned, these probably aren't the role players they wanted. You know, if you're ideally putting role players around LeBron and Anthony Davis, you want shooters. And there's some really bad shooters on this roster. Spacing is going to be an issue at certain points. Like Danny Green is probably the best three-point shooter on this roster right now. You know, yep. AD and Cousins have shot okay from three at certain points of their career, but still low 30%. LeBron is kind of hit and miss. Last few years, he's been better from three. So hopefully he has a good year from three. But I think shooting is still an issue for this team. And they're going to have question marks in terms of depth. But at the end of the day, they'll still have Anthony Davis and LeBron James. And if Cousins can be 75% of the player we used to know, at least offensively, that's a major pop. Defensively, I don't think he'll ever be good. He wasn't ever really amazing as a defender when he was healthy. And now we saw him in the finals last year. But the Lakers are still happy where they're at. I mean, you can't really be upset when you added a player of the caliber of Anthony Davis, especially at such a young age where we haven't even seen his prime.
Yeah.
Today, would you rather have LeBron James and Anthony Davis or Paul George and Kawhi Leonard?
Short term
or long term?
Hell, I don't know. Today. Short term.
So I'll go first, I guess. For this season, I think you'd rather have LeBron and AD because you think this is probably like one of the LeBron's last peak years. But then probably the years afterwards, you'd rather have Kawhi and Paul George.
Okay.
I agree with that.
Yep. Oh, sorry.
No, you're good. That was me. I jumped the gun.
So if you rank those players today, how would you rank them?
Man.
To be honest, Kawhi has to be number one.
Yeah.
Kawhi has to be one. I mean, it's tough to say. Going to next season, you expect to see a better version of Anthony Davis. So you could argue AD and LeBron are kind of 2-3 and then Paul George is fourth. But it easily could swap. I think the only thing I'm really confident with saying is Kawhi is number one and that Paul George is probably fourth. But he played better than LeBron last season. So it's like, but we know LeBron's going to be better this year. Like, I think it's just a given thing that he's going to play better in terms of energy-wise. Defensively, he's going to contribute more. AD is going to make his life. AD is arguably the best player he's ever played with. Mm-hmm. So.
I agree with that. And just so you guys know, the Lakers just signed Alex Caruso.
Oh. Big name. Big surprise.
Breaking news.
I mean, Caruso, he played decent minutes for them last year, though. He's not amazing.
Shot 49% from three. So maybe some shooting.
Neither you guys stop that. Don't do that. Don't do that right now. That's not.
It's time to bring the go back. Bring Ingram back from the G League right now, please.
Oh, well,
I forgot his name. What was his name? Andre Ingram. Yep.
J.R. Smith is still out there, right?
I mean, yeah, they'll get him too, probably.
Mello talks?
Yeah, Mello's pretty likely. I think JR's even more likely when he's bought out. He hasn't been bought out yet, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he hasn't.
Let's go, Mello.
Andre Iguodala is going to be a real possibility as well if he ends up getting bought out. But there's been talk about Memphis holding on to him and just trying to
trade him. Yeah, that should be interesting. I'm just Jorge, I want to be on Heater's Gonna Heat when you guys sign Mello, Westbrook. when you have Mello, Westbrook, Shumpert.
I certainly wouldn't be nearly as mad if we signed Mello because he's like my favorite player of all time.
So now you're playing favorites out here.
Right.
I personally wouldn't be nearly as mad if we signed Mello than if we traded for Westbrook. So I'll make sure you come over to Heater's Gonna Heat. Don't worry.
I want to say you're the biggest conundrum to hate the inefficiency of Westbrook, but to love Carmelo is a very weird conundrum. Let me tell you.
There's an emotional attachment in there that I cannot.
That you cannot explain. Nor should you try.
You like long twos, not mid-range twos. That's fine. I understand.
Have you seen the workout tapes?
It's hard.
The workouts and those open runs when he's alone.
I might just need to hop on Full Access Hoops and talk about my fandom one of these days.
Oh, you're there. Yeah. Once he signed with Miami with Westbrook, we're having you on first.
No, we're not Westbrook, please.
We have a question from one of the listeners. real quick, Jorge.
So yeah, yeah, no worries.
If going on to obviously 2020-2021 season, rank the pairs of duos from Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, LeBron and AD, and then Kawhi and Paul George.
2021 season, right?
Yeah, not next year, the year after.
I can go first if anyone's – I mean, I think it's Kawhi, Paul George, and then Durant, Kyrie, and then LeBron, AD, probably, right? Was those the three? I think the only thing I'm looking at with Durant is – even if he comes back 85%, I think the team overall is probably better because of the depth they have on paper is ridiculous for these next couple of years. But I really like the combination of talent between Kawhi and Paul George. I think that's just a different level of dynamic because that's not just offense, that's defense as well.
I'd have to agree. As crazy as it is putting LeBron last, which I have a hard time doing, it's just how it is. The Clippers are going to be dominant. Corey said two-way menace, both guys. The Nets are going to be crazy good. I'm very happy for the Buzz guys. Congrats. And then you would naturally expect LeBron to, you know, suffer from age regression. Yeah. He's turning 37 in December.
Meaning, no way is he turning 37.
Remember,
he's turning 35.
Didn't I write this article about him having the best 36-year-old season in NBA history?
I think it was best
year
30.
I think it was best year 16.
Yeah, he's only 34 right now, and he's turning 35.
30, oh, my bad. Then it was 34. Excuse me. My bad. I'll take, yeah, that's right. So still 36. GOAT. I guess I'll still have to put him third.
Well, okay, so I two things. One thing I was thinking about, I kind of am looking at this season for LeBron when Jordan came back, his first full season back. Not the half season where they got beat by the Magic, but that year they went 72-10, that Jordan, and I think he was the MVP that year. They won 72 games, you know, finals MVP, et cetera, et cetera. I think LeBron's going to have that kind of comeback year. So then my question then, going back to the 2021 question, comparatively, and this is a hard thing for us to try to do, but stick with me here on this existential question. Was okay. Jordan in 96-97 the best player at the NBA then? Was he still the best player, or was it that thing where we know Michael's the best, but some people were having better individual seasons, so we'll give the MVP to Karl Malone? Because I think about that, I'm thinking of that sort of NBA Jams question we just had a second ago with the pairings, right? Which is the best pairing? And I don't know.
Like, I think it was easy to say LeBron actually wasn't the best player in the NBA this season. Like, he wasn't.
I think that's fair.
Yeah, like, he wasn't the best. Like, even if we're going purely off statistics, like, I think other guys were just more dominant this season. Would he have been better in the playoffs? We've seen that in the past. The thing is, we really don't know. And to answer your question about the 96-97 season, I was 4 and I was 5. Years. So, yeah. Are just other people's.
Yeah, I was 2. I was the whole 2. So I really, yeah.
I was 4 years removed from being alive. So I cannot talk to that one.
You guys are dicks.
Yeah.
With that said, we are trusting you with your input.
So,
man, in this podcast, please. Eliminate us with
well, no, it's sort of thing that happened with LeBron, right? Very briefly, that Jordan, I think we could all say for a time that, hey, he's still the best player, but there are years, you know, Barkley was the MVP one season, then Malone, you know, and it sort of happened. And then when he was gone playing baseball, then Hakeem Olajuwon wins the MVP. He comes back later and it's Dave Robinson, et cetera, et cetera. We don't have to get into that. But so of those 6, then who's the worst player in those 3 pairings? Who do you have as 6? Not the worst, but if you rank them 1 through 6, forget about 1, who's 6?
Kyrie Irving?
Yeah, it's probably Kyrie or LeBron. Like, it's tough to say what LeBron is.
Kyrie or LeBron?
At that point, I mean, LeBron's going to be 36 years old.
Can't play defense. I know I hate being the guy to say that, but, like, he's already not a very good defender when it comes to being able to, like, recover off guys that burn him. Whereas I don't think I don't think the rebounds drop that much. I don't think the assists drop that much. I don't even think the points per game drop that much. But it's what is the deficiency on defense look like when he turns 36 with all these miles, all that runtime? That's my biggest concern with him.
I will say it also could be Kevin Durant. I'm not gonna
it definitely could.
Like, if he doesn't come back fully from injury, I mean, Paul George could drop off. Like, it's, do we expect LeBron to drop off at all? Like, if we don't, then he's not going to probably get lower than three on the list. But eventually, age does catch up to everyone, and he has an extreme amount of mileage. Like, yeah, we're talking, he got a big rest. MJ got, like, years off. Like, he retired for a bit. Like, people are trying to, like, discredit LeBron for that. No, LeBron's been playing basketball probably more than MJ. And you know how crazy it is now in the young age in terms of teenagers playing AAU games? He's been racking up miles probably since he's been 14. Like, his body is going to eventually at some point – he's not indestructible. We know he spends over $1 million a year on his body, but last year he had the groin injury. There's a possibility that could be something that's re-aggravated again in the future. Knock on wood, I don't want to see it, but he's not a god. At least he hasn't proven that yet.
Yeah, and I don't want to use this comparison is like a little bit different, but like reminds me of Kobe Bryant that last year where like he was 33, 34, whatever the case may be, that 2013 season. And we saw him just like an absolute – still like at the peak of his powers almost. And then the one injury happened, and like that was it for the next 3 years. Like, he never was able to
never
like,
was the same.
There.
Yeah.
Right. And of course, like, I'm not saying I think LeBron will get hurt or whatever the case may be, but like, there's these moments where you don't think it can be taken away from you. And then all of a sudden, it's just taken away.
They are. Yeah.
I think we'd all agree that probably the top two on that list out of those six players will probably be Anthony Davis or probably Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. AD and Kawhi. Yep.
And the rest of the guys just have a lot of question marks. You know, was last year peak Paul George, was that the best Paul George we're ever going to see? We really don't know because Corey knows this. He has his inconsistent issues where he's like really streaky shooting-wise, and he's not as amazing as advertised. You look at the stats, but it's because one game was like peak Paul George, next game was bad Paul George. So
last year, one of my favorite numbers, but one of the numbers I remember about Paul George is that he had over 30 games where he shot under 40% for the season.
And granted, they had a lot in common.
Right, and granted, you don't have as many weapons, so like the volume of the shots you have to take and everything else. But I mean, again, that's concerning if you're Paul George. The fact of the matter is, the guy was 28 points per game, and he had 30 plus games where he shot under 40%.
That's way too many shots. way too many shots.
It's also the team was pretty bad in terms of offensive scoring. Right. So Jimmy Westbrook had to take a lot of shots.
Yeah.
Again. Jorge, who's shooting on OKC though?
Yeah, I get it, but Westbrook shooting much?
Would you rather see Dennis Schroeder shoot? Because I sure would, and I'd rather see Westbrook or Paul George.
Yeah, but you're not pulling up, like, if you Russell Westbrook, why are you pulling up transition threes? Like,
would you rather see Justice Winslow shoot or
he can shoot this year from three, so. No more.
He plays defense, right?
Hey, Houston's finest, Justice Winslow. Yeah, Kincaid, baby.
All right. Well, anything else on the Lakers front we want to touch on before we get out of here?
No,
I think we're good.
All right, guys. Just quick question. Just hit me quick. Top five teams currently in the NBA.
Oh,
damn. Corey can give you all 30 if you want.
But, I'm actually going to my list to make sure I'm accurate.
Does it have to be in order? I don't think I'm ready.
Changed like 20 minutes ago.
Kawhi's got
the
hot.
We don't have to rank them. You don't have to rank them. Just give me top five.
Okay. That's my
pieces are going to change.
Both LA teams.
Milwaukee?
Utah.
Oh, the Jazz.
Milwaukee.
I forgot. And
you know what? I'm going to throw a shocker in there. Golden State.
It's not that crazy, to be honest. I don't think it's that crazy because if Klay comes back, like
– They're getting slept on, and I tell you what, that West Coast swing when someone's going through the Pacific Division, fuck, that is going to suck for some teams. Going through Staples to, on a Tuesday, Thursday, ending up in Oracle or the new arena on Saturday, and then just getting out in Sacramento for good measure and then getting your W in Phoenix, I guess. But – yeah, so I'm going to say Golden State, two LA teams, Milwaukee, and Utah.
Swap out the Warriors for the Sixers in my list.
Nice.
Yeah, I got Bucks, Lakers, Clippers, Jazz. And then, like, I have Sixers today earlier, but, like, I could easily put the Nuggets in there. I just think the Nuggets I think the Nuggets have plenty of potential with the fact that they're one of the youngest squads in the NBA, and they made it to the second round finally last year. They have Michael Porter Jr. finally going to probably be healthy. Everyone's saying he's an absolute monster on the court. Millsap's back. I think Denver's going to be quite fine.
Yeah, Denver could be pretty close. I think a lot depends on Michael Porter and like the jump that he makes. Obviously, he's already injured. Hopefully, he can get healthy for the season. I have the same one as you guys in terms of both LA teams, Utah, Philly, and then Milwaukee. Philly's the team I'm the least sold on right now. Like, yeah, I still need some convincing on how those pieces are going to fit. And then I'm also a little concerned about spacing. And then also playing three really big guys in terms of Joel Embiid, Al Horford, and Tobias Harris. They're not necessarily fast. And, like, obviously the NBA is super quick.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm worried still about how Ben Simmons operates when he has a lot of half-court players on that roster and Ben Simmons likes to get out and run.
I might have overreacted to the Nuggets thing.
Definitely overreacted because they're an easily like a top six team or top seven team.
You got Corey angry.
You know, I'm very you know, I'm sometimes very like, I don't.
You jumped the gun.
You know,
very emotional. Right? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
Very might be a little too, a bit too little.
All right, guys, that wraps it up. Excellent show, everybody. Corey, Jorge, Jay, thanks for hopping on. As always, thank you, everybody, for checking us out on YouTube, listening in on the podcast, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, and Dash Radio.
Peace out, knuckleheads.